opportunities arousing to make some condos out of low income housing immediately. We need some media heat to save their gangs when the street, and then we bring in the police fleet. Harass and beat everybody till they look inebriated.
Welcome back to KPFK 90.7 in Los Angeles, 98.7 in Santa Barbara. On the phone right now, we have Jason Zeidenberg, who is a criminal justice researcher, writer, analyst, and advocate for ending society's reliance on incarceration. He's the co-founder of Justice Policy Institute, where he's the executive director right now, and has served on actually Governor Schwarzenegger's Juvenile Justice Reform Working Group, advocating against the super-incarceration of youth of color, as well as more humane conditions in California Youth Authority. And as we know, much of the anti-gangs laws that Kim was talking about before in California have been used as models for the rest of the country. So we're going to have Jason talking about the Gangbusters Bill. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So Jason, why don't you just start off by giving us kind of the broad strokes about what is the Gangbusters Bill and what is it trying to do?
Basically, the Gangbusters Bill is another vehicle to lengthen sentences and give more money for prosecution of young people and young adults. It does this through a couple of new mandatory minimums around crimes that are defined as gang crimes. This country already has hundreds and hundreds of laws to enforce serious crime, including drug crimes. These new mandatory minimums are basically figured in around the provision of 2 to 3 young people or 2 to 3 people involved in some criminal act can be defined as a gang, and provides more money for prosecution in order to crack down on those kinds of crimes. You can serve up to a 10-year prison sentence for something defined as a gang crime under this, and the U.S. Sentencing Commission has estimated that something like 10,000 more prison beds will be consumed by the number of people that are projected to be affected by this legislation should it come into effect.
So I know that there's two different bills going on. One about 2 weeks ago, which I believe is H.R. 1279, went through the House and
That's
it
right.
passed. And then there is a Feinstein bill. Feinstein, our representative, our senator, has another bill that's going through the Senate. I know that there were in the 1279, originally there were some amendments in there that were trying to actually strike away the mandatory minimums. Do you know if they got rid of them? Or those
No, they didn't get rid of them. It's still a very, very, very punitive bill, including provisions around trying 16 and 17-year-olds as adults under federal law, which wouldn't be, you know, any big deal in California where they already have Prop 21, except it just, you know, accelerates and lowers the bar yet again in terms of impacting the number of young people that could end up in the adult system.
Right, and then I know recently the Supreme Court, super conservative Supreme Court, actually said that you can no longer give juveniles death penalties?
Yeah, there's...
How does this push against that?
Well, this bill is a response to two things. Number one, it's a response to the decision around Booker Fanfan, which is a series of decisions that looked at the federal sentencing guidelines and affected the federal sentencing guidelines and basically, you know, gave a little more discretion to judges around the sentencing guidelines in terms of imposing how long someone can serve behind bars and basically made them voluntary. So that's one reaction. One reaction is that they brought in these new mandatory minimums. Another way of looking at the House bill in particular is that it's a reaction to the Supreme Court ruling around the death penalty, where, you know, the Supreme Court found that they're basically just around the juvenile death penalty. There is this evolving standard that we have know more about adolescent development. We know more about young people's development, and a young person can't be held to the same criminal intent levels as an adult. So they struck those provisions. They also struck it under, you know, cruel and humane punishment, which I think could be fairly applied to youth incarceration in the adult system more generally, or incarceration in some of California's juvenile justice facilities, which in my opinion can be just as bad.
So I looked into the difference between these two bills. And I saw in the Los Angeles City Beat newspaper some of the main ones that were saying that the fine sense of the Senate bill sets non-mandatory maximums, whereas the House bill that was passed sets mandatory minimums as one.
Yeah. My general understanding, and this is a pretty interesting development for Californians to hear, is that obviously the Senate bill under Feinstein is actually a slightly less punitive of the two punitive bills. That said, I think they can both be fairly looked at as a real attack on the idea of youth-adolescent development and a more balanced social policy approach to the problem of, you know, rising crime in communities. What's more disturbing to me about the House bill, and I'd encourage people to look at Congressman Randy Forbes' website to get a sense of this, is that they are going out of their way to hype this problem in a way that we haven't seen around youth crime in a number of years, and really focus this in on some sort of fusion of gangs being this threat in terms of selling drugs, in terms of being linked to international terrorism, and being this new wave of youth crime. So to me, that's what both of these bills imply, and I guess the House bill is just the more punitive of the two.
And right, and so that also to me sounds that there is like this federal pot of money against, you know, for Homeland Security or whatnot, and then you have local law enforcement that are saying, oh, if we do this or if we sell gangs as terrorists, then we can get more money
from
certain departments.
I think we've got to really take on this hyping of the gang problem head on. There's a number of ways to look at this. Number one, I think while I am not a gang policy expert, and there really are very few of them that are outside the law enforcement prism, you know, I do think that there are some communities in this country that experience serious and high rates of crime, and some of that might be related to gangs. That said, the way that both these pieces of legislation are being billed are that serious, violent, gang, drug, linked international terrorism crime is on the rise in small towns, big cities, rural America. And that simply hasn't been borne out in any of the crime surveys that we've seen over the last few years. The most recent crime surveys show that adult crime and youth crime are still on the decline. What we have seen is law enforcement, you know, authorities reporting more, quote, gang activity, which is at their sole discretion to define. And we have seen different reporting methods in terms of reporting, quote, gang activity. There's a big difference between, quote, unquote, gang activity and crime. And I think most crime victims realize that. So I think that most people looking at these bills really have to take them apart and talk about the public safety provisions of it, and more investments in law enforcement and diminished investments in programs that work for kids isn't necessarily going to produce safer communities.
So we're on the phone with Jason Zeidenberg from the Justice Policy Institute, and wanted to ask you, what is the timeline as you see it in terms of the bill passing the Senate, if it does pass the Senate, and then, you know, coming to conference and possibly becoming a law, as one question? And I said the second one is, how can we slow it down or stop it?
Okay, well, let's start with the second question first. I think that continuing to flood Senator Feinstein's lines with, you know, an analysis that talks about we need more investment in communities and less of an investment in a law enforcement response to what can be a localized problem would be a good way to attack this bill. You know, some people, including some of the gang intervention folks in Los Angeles, have been talking about that we just need to lock in as much investment in intervention funding as possible, which I think is fine. But I think we also get as much money as we can put in investment in communities would help. I think ultimately if we're just investing more in law enforcement, no matter how much we put in for crime prevention, we're still going to be flooding the system with new people. So I think we've really got to attack both ends, both having more investments in crime prevention and programs that work to reduce crime, and also taking on the question of, do we really need more money for prosecutors to prosecute more quote-unquote gang crimes when it's a local problem at best, and crime is on the decline still in most communities in the United States?
So, Jason, then I know that there are also certain things inside the bill that I think, as you're talking about linking to kind of international terrorists or whatever, they try to target undocumented people. So what are some of the provisions that are in there around that?
It makes it a lot easier. First of all, some of the money that's in the Feinstein bill, as I understand it, can be spent towards creating even a better version of the California gangs database. So
a national gang database.
So that they'll be able to, quote-unquote, track, gang activity all over the country. And certainly Congressman Randy Forbes, is not being shy about saying or even promoting the idea that the gangs problem in the United States is one of Latinos and one of African Americans, and also linking that to questions of where these kids are coming from in terms of young people coming from Latin America and elsewhere in the world. The problem is that we're not really talking about crime. We're talking about fusing different things that we're afraid of. We're afraid of international drug trade. We're afraid of terrorism. And to some degree, because we piped it this way, we're afraid of gangs. So by fusing these three things together, and you've only really seen a couple of attempts to do this through foreign affairs and through these bills, we're creating this super menace. And indeed, when they talk about these gangs, they're talking about them as super gangs. The number of truly international gangs that can actually be ascertained is very, very small. Tiny if you compare them to actual rates of arrest or crime. So if we're really concerned about public safety, we would be taking another approach. We wouldn't be investing in these kinds of resources or investing in this kind of theory of crime reduction.
But then that also makes it very easy for politicians to ride that continued wave of we need to protect our communities, et cetera, and then get elected.
I think we're always going to be in a situation where politicians are going to be talking about public safety. And indeed, that is one of the functions of the state. Is to have some involvement in communities to help enhance public safety. The question is how, and the question is this the way we're going to make our communities safe? And I would posit that going after, quote-unquote, three MS-13 people in one state isn't as much as a good investment as investments in programs that would help hundreds of young people in Los Angeles get the jobs they need to get into the economy in a real way.
Well, thank you, Jason, for speaking with us. Can you give us some contact information, particularly a website address that has a lot of interesting, great resources on it?
I'd like the Justice Policy Institute website, www.justicepolicy.org, has some articles that really spell out some of our concerns about the gang-hyping issue. And both the Children's Defense Fund and the National Council of La Raza websites have links to send letters to Congress around both of these bills.
Great. Well, this is Jason Vandenberg from Justice Policy Institute. Thank you so much for joining us.
Take it easy.
We'll be right back with Alfonso Gonzalez, a member of the Human Rights Committee for Homies Unidos.
We struggle for our lives. We fight for our rise. Pick the fruit when you know it's right. So the revolution won't happen overnight. We got to plant them. We got to water them. Who's got to...